Hey everyone, it's Maribel Blue with a new Maribel Blue Unfiltered. This edition will be the interview edition, just so that you are understanding why Andrew is on the other screen. We're not talking about reality TV, although we may incorporate some of the behaviors of the characters on reality TV.
Yes, exactly.
So I want to immediately welcome Andrew to the interview portion of Maribel Blue Unfiltered. But before we begin this interview, if you are new to this channel, welcome. Please take the time and consider subscribing. This is an eclectic channel. I talk about reality TV, relationships, and of course, I do interviews on different types of people who are in different fields. And I'm very excited about this particular show because we are going to talk about mental health. And of course, if you are coming back to this channel, welcome back. Let us begin. Andrew is actually a friend of mine that I've known through somebody else in a whole different genre. He calls himself Rich Woods. Yes. And Rich Woods actually introduced us. And that's how we just became Facebook friends. Although yes. we never met each other physically, we have known each other all of this time. And Andrew is married. He has a beautiful wife. He does dad jokes on her on TikTok, which is always hilarious. And one of the things that Andrew does that captured my attention is that he's a chef. And I'm telling you, when he cooks, it's just like this mouth-watering food that I can probably never do myself.
Thank you. I'm self-taught. Self-taught.
Yes.
All my cooking. It's all what I've learned from either watching other people cook or like in person or on YouTube.
Which is awesome. And then your wife was also a part of all of that.
Yeah, always. She's very supportive of everything that of all the projects that I have going on. And when we first started, it was really just with the cooking show that we were doing or just, you know, food blogging. It was really just out of boredom. I was on day shift. She was on night shift. And so we weren't seeing each other. So I was just like, well, I'm bored. Let me cook. And then I just started talking to people and went live on Facebook, and we did we were doing beer reviews and drink recipes as well, and it was all a lot of fun to do.
And I was one of those live people. I was looking forward to that. That was like, that made my night. I think that replaced Adam Richman Man versus Food when he had to leave.
It was just fun. Irreverent comedy and jokes, and most of the time I was drinking heavily, so I was a little bit more loose, and it'd be dancing and singing all while cooking and learning how to cook, because I didn't always know what I was doing. Sometimes the recipes that we were cooking were for the first time.
Yeah, but I think that's the benefit of people that do these things out of lack of experience, doing it spontaneously, is that nothing is meant to be perfect.
Right. And it shouldn't be, because it wasn't, we're not in a studio. We don't have production costs. We didn't have lighting. You know, it's like lighting was, I would turn a lamp on, or if it was too bright, I would turn the lamp, you know, away from me, you know, or we would put something in front of the lamp. It wasn't like we were buying lighting rigs or anything like that.
Right.
Or even cameras. It was, hey, we have two iPads. Let's just use those. And there'd be two different feeds that one would be live, one would just be recorded. And if we wanted to, we would edit stuff into it. Or one iPad would be in front of me so I could see people commenting and try to keep interacting with people. And the other one would be for streaming and filming.
Exactly. I think those are the most fun when people just don't have this whole production behind them.
Yes.
So now let's talk about your career. I guess in the background of you cooking and doing dad jokes, you were actually working on something important for your career.
I was working as an ICU nurse and then a psych nurse. And all the while doing this food stuff, I was in school for my master's degree in nursing to be a psychiatric nurse practitioner.
What was that like? What the education itself? I have somebody doing it now. And sometimes I say to myself, maybe I missed my calling because I really love helping people. But with people today, it just makes you wonder, can you actually make a difference? Like, was there ever a time during your education that you questioned, is this for you?
There were times, not so much during clinicals, but the process. During my clinical process, there was a classroom component and then a clinical component. And you had to find locations that would let you do the clinicals there, which was difficult in itself. And then a few weeks before I was to start my first of four clinicals, this was in the midst of COVID. The location said, hey, we're not going to be open as far as an in-person location. So we have to hold off. So I lost a semester. And then I found another way around it and doing it through my job. And then they had additional requirements. And then during that whole time of going through clinicals, my school changed their requirements and their curriculum. So I had to adapt. And there were times during the clinical portion, I was just like, I just can't keep doing this. I'm working three night shifts a week and clinical 2 day shifts a week. And then there's schoolwork to be on top of. And like the process is just becoming too grueling that it was just like, I just can't keep it up. And my wife was like, nope, you can. She did very well with grounding me and helping me to get those feelings expressed and like, okay, you finished, because now you got to get back to it, you know? And that was just how we were operating for a long time. There was at one point, even before clinicals started, I had two classes, advanced assessment and advanced psychiatric assessment and advanced psychiatric pharmacology, the two of the hardest classes. And in the midst of that, I was still working, full time on night shift. And I ended up in the emergency room, and the cardiologist came in and was talking to me, and she was like, what school are you going to? And I told her, what classes you have? I told her, she's like, honey, those are the two hardest classes. You're not supposed to take them together. You have to break them up. And I was like, well, it's too late now because I just submitted my finals 2 days ago. So like, I'm all done. And she was like, you should never have taken those two classes alone. That's why you're in a hospital bed with hypertension and chest pain. I'm like, yeah, I know, but it's too late. I already did that. Like, they're already done. Like, I'm on to the next thing already. So yeah, it definitely had a unique set of challenges that were not foreseen. You couldn't have foreseen any of them.
So going back to you being in the hospital and having taken these two courses.
Yes.
And what was your mindset? You were like, okay, I did it. I'm here at the hospital.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind after that when she said that you shouldn't have taken those two?
I was like, it's too late for one, like, because it was the week after, like, it was a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and my finals and everything got submitted on Saturday. So I was like, it was after the fact now. So there was nothing that I could do to change anything. The only thing I could do is just like, all right, well, I need to get better because next Sunday starts next classes. So let's go.
So once you got your degree, what was your anticipation, or what's the protocol normally when you get your degree in this field? Do you have to work for a hospital?
No. I just worked in the hospital as a nurse. I had to take a test prep class and I had to take a state exam and pass it. And then you have to file for your DEA number. You have to file for so you could dispense medications. You have to file for a provider number with insurance companies so that this way you can start getting a credentialed for insurance companies to pay wherever you're going to work for your visits. There's a lot of stuff that, and no one tells you this, you're figuring a lot of this stuff out on your own or because someone that you know has gone through it and you're able to pick their brain. And right. A good friend of mine was like, you find a job and then you tell the job that you need their MPI number and the DEA number, and then they get it for you and they process it. And I was just like, you know what? I want to be as marketable as possible for any potential employer. So I'll just do all that myself. And, there's an expense. All these things cost money. And you're just like, okay, I don't care because I want to get a job as quickly as possible.
I think that's a good thing that you had people that were guiding you along the way, even though most of the stuff you've done on your own. Because from experience on my side of the field, which is basically entertainment, even though like I'm doing it most of it on my own, is that you have to be careful with who you share your ideas with.
Yes, definitely.
Who you associate yourself with. Because either A, people are out there to steal your ideas and run with it. And I have had people steal my ideas and run with it and fail miserably at it. Yeah. And I remember one time I was talking to this lady and she said, well, if they failed, then that shows you what would have happened to your idea.
No, never.
I don't believe that.
A lot of times it comes down to work ethic. Okay. What are you willing to do to reach your goal? Okay. When I started with school, you know, just with, for practitioner school, I was on night shift. There was a day shift nurse. She was like, oh, I'm doing that too. And I'll be done before you. I was like, oh, okay, no problem. You know, good for you. I really don't care if who's done before me. I don't care who's done after me, other than did I help you when you asked for help? If you came up after me, that's my thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it like maybe it was like a semester in, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, semester starts in a week. Or she was like, oh, does it really? I was like, yeah, like, you know, it starts for you too. You go to the same school. She's like, oh no, I dropped out. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, whatever. And she's like, yeah, it just got to be, it was too much. It's too encompassing of my everyday life. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's an immersion program. It's a 2-year program for a reason. If it didn't take over too much of your life, it would be a 4 to 5 year program and you wouldn't be done. But you immerse yourself into it and surrender to the process and trust that process, and you just keep pushing forward no matter what.
Right. Well, the magic word is commitment. How much commitment are you willing to put into this career? Whatever career path that somebody decides to pick, what is your commitment? And in the guise of what happened with this particular idea was the commitment. I also think that it has to do with personality, how to come across. If you're a likable person, if people like watching you and listening to you, I think all of those things factor in. And of course, that goes for any career. If you're going to be a therapist, so to speak, and somebody is having a one-to-one session with you, and you're just going off on the deep end about yourself and not really listening to them, how long do you think you're going to have that?
Exactly.
Let's talk about your career path now. Let's talk about the Caliper Wellness Center that you opened up and the steps that you took to go through all of that. Because, you know, people put up this front. Everything is going smooth. It's kind of like when they talk about like that beautiful swan, you know what I mean? You see the beautiful swan, but you know the swan is down in the thing paddling to get to the other side. So what were all those steps like for you to open up your wellness center?
I had to form an LLC, which I never did. I had someone, my accountant, who walked me through the steps. But she walked me through the steps, but she was like, this is when you now do this. Now you have to go do that. And now you have to register for your employee identification number. She didn't do it for me, which is fine. That's not the point. The point is like someone, she guided me and it was like, okay, so now you have your LLC. Okay. Well, now I can start seeing patients. What else do I need? Well, I need a website. I need a name, even if it's different than my LLC, and I could just file paperwork for a DBA. Right. So it's like, okay, fine. What else do I need? I need a charting system. I need a prescription, a way to fill prescriptions for patients. And it's like, okay, well, what do I want to do with the practice? Like, what's the goal? Obviously it's mental health, but what do I want to treat for mental health? Like, what is it exactly that we're going to be, what type of patients are we going to be seeing, you know, in this practice? And how do I want to see them? What hours do I want to have? And this is all stuff you have to figure out before you flick a light on. It's all stuff you have to not just figure out, you have to write it down because there's too much stuff to remember. And then it's like, okay, I need a website. Who do I know that could build a website? Or who do I know that is willing to show me how to build a website? And if they're going to build it, can they stay within a budget? How do I get a budget? Like, what do I do? How much money do I have to put aside for a total startup budget? And it's like, it's a lot. It's a lot of things moving in different directions at the same time and different times at different speeds.
See, these are the things, everything that you're talking about, these were the things that when people were building websites, like way back in the day when they were using like Dreamweaver before Adobe had purchased it, I was sitting there right next to them watching everything they were doing, because eventually I wanted to take over and do it myself.
Yes.
I'm not the kind of person that I like to sit around and wait for somebody to make a correction on a typo. I want to be able to go in and there's a typo and fix it up right away. Yes. And of course, over time with technology, we have a lot of different platforms that are just basically drag and drop if people don't have the patience for WordPress, which is also another thing that I've learned. You have all of these different choices, which is wonderful, especially if somebody wants to make their website more informational. Maybe they don't want to take payment. Maybe there's not going to be a store. So there's all of these different options for you. And these were one of the things that I took the initiative to learn because I wanted to be able to do it myself. Of course, there are a lot of times that you can't do everything yourself, and eventually you have to trust somebody else. Yeah.
That's where I'm at right now with marketing. I don't, I mean, I understand marketing. I know I am not afraid to talk to people as far as, you know, networking, whatever, but actual marketing and SEO and hashtags, like that stuff that like, I just, one, I don't have the knowledge, an advanced knowledge base, but I also don't have the time to. So I have turned to someone to be like, hey, can you do this aspect of it, and I'll answer questions as you need, as far as, let's just say, a post on social media and stuff like that.
And I'll share some stuff with you offline because I've been talking to somebody younger than me who it's somebody that I actually work with, and he was giving me all of these tips on what to do, and I'm like, oh, what? Like, I didn't even know you can do that. So I will share those tips with you offline because they have been super helpful. Actually, I'm going to try one of the tips this week. So I'm going to see how it turns out, and then I'll tell you how it turns out.
Awesome.
So yeah, there are definitely some tips and tricks that you can find either from online or even the younger generation who spends most of their time on the internet.
Yes.
Looking up everything under the sun. So one of the questions that I wrote down was, you're in this industry. Do you have clients right now?
I have two. And that's after 3 weeks of being online.
Right. Because this is all new right now. This is
brand new. Like the website was finalized, I want to say the 15th of July. We're right now at August 7th. And like I said, it's been 2 or 3 weeks and I have two patients.
So here is the link to the website.
Yes.
What were your feelings like when you were putting all of this together? Was there uncertainty? Was there fear? You know how like people go through different things when they're developing their own business? Like, should I do it? Should I not do it? Because I'm going to venture on something new with a new channel. And I'm like, I'm ready.
then go for it. Like that's just what you have to do. It's like, I am not like, I have a full-time job. So this is something I'm building up with the goal of it becoming a full-time job for me in like, I want to say 2 years, I think is the time frame that we came up with. And it's like, you're never going to be fully ready. So why wait until you think you're fully ready? Just go in. Like, I had this discussion on one of the forums that I'm on Facebook for entrepreneurial nurse practitioners like myself. One of the pharmaceutical companies raised their prices on a certain type of medication. So we're all going back and forth on it. And because of where I'm at with treating patients, I'm just like, at month three, the cost goes up a lot. So I'm like, hey, how am I still going to make money month three? And someone chimed in with the question of, well, what are you going to do when you get to the maintenance dose? And I was like, I don't know. I will figure that out when I get to it in five months from now. Well, or when I get someone who's on the who is ready for the maintenance dose. Right now, I'm at people who I'm trying to attract people who would be at a starting dose. So I'm thinking that way, like, well, you shouldn't. You should always be able to see every angle. Like, you can't figure out every angle, because I can figure out a maintenance dose cost and profit margin, let's just say, for it right now. But when I get to that point in 6 months, the price could go up again. And I'll have to figure it out again. So why am I going to waste that time right now? It's just something I know I have to be aware of, but it's not something I need to figure out right now. So you do have to prioritize with stuff. It's like, What's the stuff I need to worry about right now? What's the stuff I don't have to worry about in 3 months? What's the stuff I don't have to worry about in 6 months? And that stuff will change. Sometimes the 6 month stuff is going to come up in 4 months. So you do have to be aware, but you still have to just say, I'm just doing this and I'm going to swing at this pitch, whether it's right down the middle or not, in the hopes of hitting a home run. If it ends up being a dribbler down the third baseline, so be it. I'll get on base. You cannot Agreed. Wait for that perfect pitch. It just exactly. it might not ever come. Mm-hmm. So swing.
I agree with you on that. And I have 63 yes. credits in business management and communications. And in business management, part of the curriculum in business management is marketing.
Yes.
And you could say, like, business management, more than half of the courses you're taking are all these different aspects of marketing. But then it's also the aspects of business management and making Yes. effective and efficient choices, which is one of the things that I talked about, like, early on when I started doing, like, business coaching. What's going to be effective for your business? What's going to be efficient for your business? Sometimes people don't realize that there are two different concepts yes. of efficiency and effectiveness.
Yes.
And without disclosing the day job that I have, I commend them for the things that they're doing. It's great that you can be in a specific or special field mm-hmm. and have the knowledge of that specific field. Yes. However, it's a completely different thing when you don't have the business management concept yes. for your business. So what I'm seeing is that if somebody comes in and they have this great product and they sell it to them, they talk about the product. Of course, nobody's going to downgrade their product and say, this product is great, but nobody is going to say that. A salesperson is going to come in. They're going to talk about their product. They're going to talk about how great it is and how much of it they're selling. And then they buy into it. And then before you know it, the product is just sitting there.
Yes.
And that's when you have to think and say, how was this effective for your business? Did yes. you think about your customers? And would they need something like this? Now you done spend a whole bunch of money on something that may not be needed.
Yes.
And that's the same way with the medication. Okay, the medication went up, but do I need to think about that right now? Maybe right. that's something that I need to revisit 3 to 6 months later.
I mean, like, if someone called me tomorrow and was like, hey, this is the medication I'm on and I'm at the maintenance dose. Okay, well, now it's a priority. Mm-hmm. But until it's a priority, I still follow my algorithm of what we're following to get to where we want to go.
Was there ever a time that you questioned yourself as you're going through the education? And we're not strangers to anything mm-hmm. that we're seeing on social media, the Karens, the yeah. Kevins, the people who just get angry at the drop of a dime. Like, for example, and I'm sure you've seen the video of the guy with the smoothie and yelling at the girls because yeah. it had some peanut in it and his yeah. child is allergic to peanut. You know, a lot of these places already have signs there, even right next to the recipe. If you have allergies to XYZ, this product has it in there. So food places are very open about what's in their food. That way you yes. don't drop dead, you yeah. know, when you go to buy something that you don't know there's something in there that you shouldn't be eating. When you see videos like that, when you see videos of people exploding, they're not thinking about how somebody is going to recognize them, how somebody's going to find them on LinkedIn, tell their employer about their behavior, the things that they did. I put it like this. This is my concept. When I was a little girl, okay, my mom always put Sesame Street on. Exactly. Because it was like being schooled. During before you would go to school,
but with friends,
right? exactly. And there was one little cartoon episode where the sister wanted to pop her sister, her baby sister's balloon. And she went through a whole series. If she pops the balloon, the sister will cry. If she pops the balloon, the sister will cry. The vase will get knocked down. If she pops the balloon, the sister will cry. The blah, blah, blah. She just went through this whole series in her head of the probability, even though I didn't know what probability was, of the probability of what would happen if she popped the balloon. And then at the end of the story, the moral was for her, you know what? I'm not going to pop the balloon because it seems that if I do, it's just going to cause this whole chaos for one little simple action. Yes. And I'm saying to myself, where the fuck are people's brains that they're not thinking in the capacity I'm willing to risk to lose my six-figure paying job, a career that I worked hard on, clients, a book of clients that are now going to go to somebody else because I'm here screaming at these young kids about a smoothie that had peanuts in it. Like, was it all worth it? And do you think to yourself, what if I get this type of person?
Oh, well, I worked when I was a psych nurse. I worked at an inpatient psych hospital that dealt with people who were unstable. I mean, they would come in unstable and needed stability. So it's no stranger to me to have a patient who's unstable and unreasonable. Honestly, it's kind of what it's actually the direction I thought my career was going to go in, because I was really good at verbally diffusing and physically diffusing violent patients or patients that were on the verge of becoming violent. So to not be in that end of psychiatric medicine is kind of surprising to me right now.
Do you think that people have always been this way? And it's social media has brought them to the light?
A good part of it is social media bringing it to light. We are not the society, the polite and advanced society that we used to be. We have devolved. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons in my mind or theories that I have on that. But we're not that society. We are not those people anymore. You know, we're just not. And you see a lot of, I mean, I love TikTok. TikTok is awesome. My wife and I send each other TikTok videos all day long of when we're home. Like we don't watch much TV. We will watch, mm-hmm. we will watch TikTok videos for a half hour and then send them back and forth to each other and then talk about them and laugh about them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There is always one where it's someone on an airplane refusing to wear a mask and giving the flight crew a hard time. And it's like, these people are just doing their job. They are following their corporate policy. If their corporate policy said, hey, every passenger that comes on the plane has to wear a bow tie, then they're going to make sure every passenger who comes on wears a bow tie. And if you don't have one, they're going to give you one, because that's what management wants. And you purchase that ticket under the pretense of adhering to all the rules and regulations set forth by the corporation. There's nothing to argue about. You're arguing with someone who, one, is hardworking, two, on their feet, three, exhausted, and four, they just want to be home with their family. Right. And you're giving them a hard time. And now you're holding up a whole plane of people who want to get to where they're supposed to be going. And you keep seeing, you know, we see more and more of these flights being delayed or rerouted. And it's like, hey, I only get a certain amount of days from my vacation. If I lost a day of my vacation because you just can't do something as simple as wearing a mask, and you can't grasp the concept of wearing a mask inside of a plane, which is something we probably should have always been doing, I don't need to be around you in society. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't try, whatever your job is, I don't trust you to do it, because you can't grasp a simple concept of you're in someone else's, all right, for lack of a better term, backyard. You're in that on that plane. You're in someone else's backyard, their home, their office, whatever. You adhere to those rules of the house. If you came into my home and I said for you, please take your shoes off, because we don't like people walking around the house in our shoes, you take your shoes off.
Right.
Or if you come into my house and I'm like, hey, leave your shoes on. We don't like people walking around the house in socks. Mm-hmm. You do that because it's respect for that person's home. The plane is no different. The plane belongs to, I'm going to say a fictional name, to Pan Am Airlines, right? Mm-hmm. You adhere to the rules of Pan Am's house, because that's just the way it is. You don't have a voice like you think you do. We're under this misconception that we have our voice is law. And it's like, it's not.
And the thing is, I wonder, like, where did all of these egos come from? Like, I really, that's the part that I really don't understand. The ego, the humility.
Without a doubt. Okay. Social media, definitely. We all feel as though our voice matters. It doesn't. Black lives matter.
Yes.
Well, everyone's voice doesn't matter. Everyone's opinion. Because everyone feels as though their opinion and their voice is the most important voice in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. We're just shouting. We're just your voice is no different than another couple million people's voices being shouted out the window.
Right. I guess the most important part of it is the message. Like, your message can matter. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, what is your message? And also, is the message making common sense that's helping others? Because if you're not helping others and you're just blah, 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 and I'm blah, 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 and I have a right and da, 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 then who is really listening to all of that?
Exactly. Once you start saying nonsensical stuff, whatever your message is goes out the window. If you're sitting there, it's just like we see a lot of people in restaurants and stores now with their pet. And listen, I love my dog. My dog is my best friend. Ruby is awesome. She's right here next to me right now. She's a big dog. She's about 100 pounds. Do I want to bring her everywhere I go? Mm-hmm. Yes. Do I think that it is feasible to bring her everywhere that I go? No. Do I think that everyone else is going to fall in love with those big, brown, sad eyes of hers? No. She's adorable to me, and she should be adorable to me. She's my dog. But you see people walking around. I was at Publix this morning. There's a lady walking around with her dog. Why? You brought your dog from home into the store. Why? You don't need your dog. It's not a support dog. It's not a service dog. It had no vest. It was just the dog.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's like, well, everyone feels as though, well, my dog is the exception. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Everyone feels that their set of circumstances is the exception to rule. No, we have rules in society for a reason. If everyone's the exception, then there's no rules.
If you came across a client who had these self-centered difficulties.
Like a narcissist.
Yes. When you talk about the narcissistic behaviors and how that can affect other people, like what are the things that we should be looking out for when it comes to these narcissistic tendencies? Because I just want to delve into a little bit about relationships. I'm not going to get into so much of my own personal experience with it.
Okay.
I did have an experience with that kind of a person. And like, what are the signs that we should be looking out for so that nobody gets trapped into something like that?
You want to look out for someone who's only worried about themselves, who is constantly being or constantly portrays themselves as a victim, even though they're like an aggressor. Someone who wants to always put their needs and wants first, or someone who's kind of manipulating situations to make it seem like they're putting other needs first, but only not putting the other people's needs first. Their needs are really first. Like, some stuff would be like, hey, I'm trying to give a good example without sounding terrible. Hey, I need help and support for what I'm doing. This way I can take better care of you. So what I'm dealing with is more important than what your day is. You have to hear my day, because my day is going to be what puts food on this table. So I don't want to hear about your day. You have to hear about my day. And it's like that unevenness in a relationship, you know. Don't get me wrong. Everything that I do is for my family's, you know, greater good. But that doesn't mean what I'm doing is more important than like what my wife's doing or the stuff that my stepdaughter is working on. Like, I want to hear about that stuff. My stuff could come last. I really don't care, you know. And if someone who is totally selfish and not selfless, you want to, you know, if someone, something as simple as if someone is really rude to a waiter consistently, they did something wrong. They look down on people. They have a superiority complex, you know, that they're not addressing, or they are addressing and they don't care.
It's frightening because a lot of people that I talk to, they're all social in one form or another, which means that most of their activity is online.
Yes.
Most of men and women, they're meeting people through these apps, which I proudly say I have none on my phone. When you encounter somebody who sounds like this could be a person that I could spend the rest of my life with because they're just on the same parallel path.
Well, if and someone seems like that right off the bat, they're hiding something. Okay, if someone seems too good to be true day one, there's something going on. Whether it's they're a people pleaser, they suffer from low self-esteem, or they have ulterior motives, something right off the bat, something's not right. Okay. Mm-hmm. When Jen and I got together, neither of our lives were perfect. And we were very upfront and open with what wasn't right and what we wanted to change and what we needed help with changing and what we needed just patience with changing. There wasn't anything where I was like, oh my God, Jennifer's absolutely perfect for me. There were things where I'd be like, oh, do I really want to, you know, is this a red flag or is this something I'm going to want to deal with? And vice versa. There was stuff going on in my life where I'm sure she was like, this dude doesn't have it all together, you know? And that's how it's supposed to be. Someone who is too perfect right off the bat is not perfect. There's something that they're hiding for whatever the reason, whether it's out of malice or fear, you know,
or scamming.
They're either trying to get over or they're trying to keep something hidden. And for whatever reason, whether it's for a vicious reason or just simply like me, I'm a big people pleaser and it's from past trauma, you know, and it's like, all right, well, I work on that, you know, and I acknowledge it. And there are times I do too much for people. And my wife is very patient with me because I make mistakes in that regard. And she knows this about me. It's something I've always known about myself. It's something I consistently work on.
Now, you said something when you were talking about when you and Jen were first getting to know each other and you were questioning certain behaviors, et cetera. Yeah. In my experience, like I had an experience recently with a person that I love and I admit it, you know the situation. So the cat is out of the bag. Yes, I'm in love. I've been in love with this person now for a number of years. And I just recently confessed and nothing came out of it.
Right.
I think this is why I'm just at this point right now where if you expect less and you concentrate on yourself more.
Yes, you'll get further.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Instead of
the other thing to remember. The other thing to remember, and this is stuff, this is strictly from my experience in life, not from any sort of formal training, that big declaration of love that we see in movies, and the movie Chasing Amy is the one that always comes to mind because it's the biggest one that I could think of because it was so out of place. That is not necessary. The person who cares about you doesn't need that gigantic declaration of love of, You're the earth, you know, you're the earth to my moon. You're the constellation. We need that. It's simple. It's actions. And then it's a very simple, I love you. Anytime that you feel that need, and again, this is what I've learned from, made the mistake plenty of times, that you feel like, hey, if I just tell them this big declaration of my love, it'll change, turn things around. It doesn't. It won't. Mm-hmm. It scares people away. Right.
I think it was a matter for me, for my own personal experience, just to let it go. I've been bottled up with it since like towards the end of 2019.
Right. And if that's the motivation behind it, I will always say go for it because you don't want to keep anything inside. But if you have that mindset of I'm going to say it because that's what's going to be the difference maker, it's not. It's not the difference maker.
And ideally, in a different setting, if the person was more of a physical person, I guess, physical being taking the time out.
Yes.
Then I probably would have, but I felt like I was at a point where my hand was forced and it's just like, you know what? Just say it and let it go
and
be
go.
Done with it.
Yes. Because then you'll carry it around with you.
Exactly.
You don't want that.
And I didn't want to be in a position of what if, well, maybe I should have. Yeah. And I didn't want to put myself there because I've been there plenty of times. Yes. And it's not really a good feeling because you feel incomplete when that happens. And it just really came to a point. It's just like, you know what? Say it, let it go. And whatever happens, happens. And if this person is caring and respectful of you, then they're going to come correct.
Yes.
Maybe at a different time. Can't guarantee that I'm going to be available though. Right. Do you know what I'm saying?
Because, and that's on them at that point.
Right. Because a lot of people sit back and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait.
Don't wait. It's just like we said before, the perfect pitch. It doesn't come. You take your swing And you got to be prepared. Like, I'm going to miss this ball. I'm going to foul it off. It's going to be a pop-up. And you still have to take that chance. I will always say, take that chance, especially on love. You always take the chance on love, as long as that is your goal of I want to take the shot. Because, like, all right, we started Caliper, and I talked to my wife. I was like, should we do this? And she's like, well, what if you don't? What if you don't take the chance? It's like, well, then I'm never going to know if I can make my own business go. And I'm always going to want, and I'm a big believer, like, I wanted my own practice. I want to be able to call the shots. I don't like it my job. I have an overseeing physician who tells me, like, these are the medications you're allowed to give. These are the medications you're not allowed to give. I don't want to follow someone else's ideology. I want to follow my ideology. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't take that chance, I would always be subjected to playing by someone else's rules. And I didn't want that for myself. And I try to be an example for my children of take the chances in life. The worst that happens is you fail. I failed at a bunch of things in my life. It's fine to fail. You have to learn something and then decide if you want to continue. You take the lumps. You have to take those punches in life. You have to. Because that's what's going to one day make the difference.
And that's what I had noted in my card, because when you were talking initially about you and Jen, and I was saying to myself, is there such thing as too much analyzing? Can you analyze a relationship so much that you kick yourself out of the relationship?
Because
one of the things that I wanted to say was, the comment of you need to figure out what you want and I need to figure out what I want. I'm like, hello, I think I fucking know what I want. Yes. If you don't know what you want, then I can understand that and I'll step aside and let you have your own journey.
You go figure it out. And when you figure it out, maybe I want to hear you, maybe I won't. Yeah. But maybe someone else already has it figured out.
Right.
And I'm what they figured out.
How do you know when you're over analyzing?
You don't, unless someone that's close to you will tell you. There's a term, like, it's a wrestling term, and it's called work yourself into a shoot, which means you're coming up with this fake set of circumstances just to get yourself upset. And you'll talk yourself out of something just by coming up with, if I try to figure out every single angle involved in at this particular point, what's going to happen? And odds are you're going to miss every one of those points because you're not continuing on a linear path. Mm-hmm. Something else is going to come up that you're going to miss, and it's going to cause you a setback. You can overanalyze something to the point of not moving or ruining something because you spend too much time thinking about it.
Now that you're getting your feet wet and you have Caliper Wellness, which I'm going to put back up, how do you see your goal later on down the line in helping people? Like, what are your aspirations? Because you're doing this not just out of the goodness of your heart, but you have to have some kind of heart in it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
to help people, which I think is important. I mean, I help people on a different level. I'm not a certified professional, so to speak, but I'm more of like the spiritual realm of helping people and looking inside yourself that way. You're on a professional psychological level.
Yeah.
What are your aspirations to see maybe a patient, and then you're coming towards the end of that life with the patient? Because you don't want to see them forever and ever and ever.
Every relationship has an ending. When you enter into a therapeutic relationship. And even though, like, I primarily do medication management, my goal, and I tell all my patients this, my goal is to get you to a point where you don't need the medications. Medication is just a tool which we use while you adjust, make the adjustments in your life that are necessary. If, like, for me, I'll take me as a perfect example, as just so people can get a better understanding. I have hypertension. Okay. I was taking three different medications for hypertension. I made lifestyle adjustments to get my blood pressure under control physically so I don't need the medications. You know what I mean? So it's no different. If you suffer from anxiety or depression, I'm going to write you a prescription for a medication that's going to help with that. And you're going to have therapy, limited therapy sessions with me, or some more advanced therapy sessions with a therapist that are going to teach you coping skills. They're going to teach you how to heal from past trauma. Mm-hmm. while, and all the medications is doing is taking that edge off so that you're not preoccupied with the anxiety, depression, whatever, while you learn these skills and you start to apply them to the point when then you don't need the medication.
Well, I hope that you are able to achieve those goals with people, because sometimes I say to myself, wow, like, people are challenging and could be difficult at times for really no reason. I see people put themselves in settings where, like you were talking about before, like making themselves deliberately angry.
Yes.
And I call that, you know, like fear of the unknown and the comfortability with those feelings that you continue to induce on a daily basis because you don't want to feel anything else. Why do you watch that particular news? Why do you...
If it's going to make you upset, why do it? Why?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Because people get comfortable in that setting, in those feelings. It's like, wait a minute, I feel good. I don't feel angry. I need to put something on to make myself feel angry. And I'm like, who does that? And like, why?
That's the part I love. There is a sense of comfort that comes with it, because that's just what people are used to. They're used to watching, let's just say, the news from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. before the primetime shows come on. And if they get upset, so be it. But most times they're looking to get upset because they want to be upset, because there's a comfort level in that.
Yeah, but it's also not very healthy.
It's not healthy at all. No. Yeah, it's not healthy at all. Just like, hey, if you're diabetic, why are you eating ice cream every night? It's the same thing. It's the same thing. You're doing something that you know is not healthy for you, but you're choosing to do that.
Exactly. Andrew, is there anything else that I left out that you want to include on this interview?
Please be nicer to each other. Please.
Right?
It's the only thing I would say. I mean, yes, I can tell you Caliper Wellness, not all mental issues are in your head. Yes, I could totally sit here and plug my website and my practice. But please, let's be nicer to each other. A little common courtesy goes a long way, and pay it forward. Someone's nice to you, be nice to the person coming up behind you, please.
Agree. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out and having this discussion. I know this is not going to be the last time, because something else is going to come up. I'm sure that I'm going to be like, can you talk about this topic with me?
Yes,
especially when it comes to like reality TV shows and dating, I think that's like a whole other element that we can talk about, the psychological aspects, especially in relationships, which is my favorite topic of them all.
Yes. I would love to. Yeah, anytime you want to have me back on, please let me know. I'll be back.
Yay. Awesome. Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode. And of course, I'm going to put it on podcast, so if people can't watch it for whatever reason that is, it will also be available on anchor.fm/Maribel Blue. Andrew, thank you again for being
on the
interview portion.
Thank you for having me. It's so nice to do.
Yes, and it's such a break in conversation, which I love. Thank you, everybody, again, for watching and listening. And of course, as always, before I do my closing line, be sure to subscribe if you have not yet subscribed. And as always, be good to yourself, be good to each other. Most importantly, take care of you. Bye, everybody.